And record is starting. Okay. All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our Monday night webinar call. And we got a lot to share and to talk about what's been going on here in New York. And there's so much I'm not even sure where to start. I guess I'll start with the fact that we went, we took a tour. Well, first of all, on Thursday, Gerard and I went down to New York City and we were interviewed. Well, Gerard was interviewed. They did a one-hour interview, and they were so interested in it, they set up the cameras again and took a second hour. They wanted a third hour, but they didn't have the time to be able to do that. And we met also some other producers down there, and they want to also do some interviews. And then we got a call, what was it, today, Gerard, on getting some more from the first one? They want to do a few hours more? You there, Gerard? Maybe you might want to talk a little bit about that with the interviews, and then we'll move to the next thing. You want to add anything?
Well,
to that?
they want to do more because, number one, you know, this is public access TV, and they need good material. And right now, public access TV is under attack. You know, it's the last place that they don't have control over. So, you know, you can get a lot of news out on public access TV that the other ones don't put out. So, and in the city, you know, they got some really good public access TV, and they're able to do some stuff with it. So, you know, they got a bunch of baloney going on with Time Warner and a couple. There's all kinds of politics in that public access. They're trying to – what they do is they – if nobody takes those slots, they sell them, and, you know, they make it commercial. You know, when they split up the television and they went to from analog to digital, the HD TV – they added all those channels, like you got three PBS, you got 13.1, 13.2, you know, 13.3. Well, some of those things became available for public access. And if you don't go in and get them, what they do is then they rent them out and they get money. Don't ask me who's getting this money, because this is money to set this up that was paid for by the taxpayers. So I don't know how they go about renting this out, who's shoving the money in their pocket, but that's a discussion for another day. Fact of the matter is it's very important to especially like in your own towns, to check into your public access TV on your cable channels and stuff. And if you can get some time slots in there, because you just asked for a time slot, and we had a guy used to go in and just put videos on. And, you know, he'd get an hour, 2 hours, whatever it was, and he'd run, you know, he'd run like the Loose Change video or What the World in there Are They Spraying? And for a lot of people, that's pretty radical stuff. They've never heard of it. At any rate, we have other producers down there that when they saw the show, they want to get us on it because they realize that this thing is a potential viral thing, which is good for them, you know, because they need people watching.
Plus,
them.
They were dabbling in the court systems and were finding discovered how corrupt they were. And also they've been dabbling in the common law. This, the ones that did do the interview, they were involved with the common law. But go ahead.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different kind of producers, and each one of them has their own following. You know what I mean? Because they even though they dovetail, sometimes they touch on the same areas with the common law and the courts and going in sui juris and pro se and all that stuff. A lot of it is similar, but yet it's different. And they have a lot of the same constituents, but they also have different ones. And so the idea is to get us on all of them because, well, you know, there's a potential 800,000 people right off the bat.
Yeah, that one producer came in and was watching the beginning. She was in the studio and watched the beginning of the interview. And then she ended up sitting in for the whole 2 hours listening in and wanted to immediately to get us onto her program. So, again, the story was powerful.
So, the other thing, I don't want to take up too much time with this, but they're going to make DVDs of what we tape. And you see, we can't get that channel up here. That's down there. You'll never tune into it. So, but what we can do is we can take them DVDs and we can bring them back here and we can throw them on our sites. We can throw them in YouTube. Well, they're going to have them on YouTube on their site. It doesn't matter. But you can take that to your public access TV station, and you can start playing it. You know, get somebody to come in there at a certain hour and play those things and build up the people's interest, you know?
Yeah, and that's a key thing. We're going to get someone. I'll get a hold of, I know a few people, get a hold of someone that can maybe write up how to get at public access in your towns or your counties. And if people go out and do that, then we could start getting grassroots working with these different things, not just with what we're doing. There's a lot of things we could do with it. But, of course, pushing forward the grand jury is the key. So,
well, my feeling is that because we're striking at the heart of the matter, because we're right in up against their eyeball, so to speak, because this is where, in this country, the way they control us is through the courts. I mean, that's the chief way. They're always dragging you into court for something. And once you get in there, it's a nightmare. Everybody knows it. And we got all different levels of court. You got the child welfare. You got the motor vehicle. You got this. You got that. You got planning board zoning. It's all a bunch of baloney, and we're slaves. And everybody knows we're slaves, but, you know, nobody's proclaimed it. Well, guess what? That's what we're doing with the grand juries. We're proclaiming that we, the people, are back to take control. Now, this scares the crap out of them. Now, you better believe that they're going to level their, to give us their level best to knock us out somehow. But they're, you know, they're always behind the eight ball. And I truly believe that you know, we are running a clean battle here, a blessed battle, so to speak. You know what I mean? That we have right on our side, and you know, and right is what gives us our might. It's not that might makes right; it's that, you know, when you proclaim the truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. So we need to do that, and we need everybody throughout the nation at this point should be pushing real, real hard to have their elections and sending their paper into all those clerks in every county, because we've started a movement here. They've sent out I don't know if everybody knows, but they eventually, as we were going around and getting these stupid replies from the different, you know, court clerks and county clerks about why they couldn't file our papers and what they required, and we got as many replies as we had clerks, different things, you know. Oh, you got to put money in. Oh, this is not the proper paper. Oh. They finally got their act together, and it went up to the chief administrative judge, A. Gail Prudente. And
well, actually, that was the that particular letter, that the first letter was really dated way back when. That was the one that they didn't want to give, but there was one that was released on the 10th that really just threatened us.
Well, the reason they didn't want to give us the letter, I think they realized that they really stuck their neck out on the line, and basically what their letter said was, the people have no common law and they have no right. And it was said so, and she ordered all the clerks, both the court clerks and the county clerks, to refuse any filings and don't allow us in. So she drew a line in the sand that now they have to defend, the chief judge. Hence, when you see this paper, the names that are on it are the players that stuck their head up. And so basically what they're saying, and you know, this is going to be, listen, either we have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence is in effect, or it's not. And that's what this is about.
We're going to get a little into that after we talk about us running around the state here. I mean, the county. Well, the state, quite a few counties, yeah.
Huh? To finish this, my thing is that this should become a movement across the nation, people filing papers to get into their courts. Instead of doing Tea Party rallies and standing on the corner and waving signs that they don't give a shit about, they called in every court. They watched our every move. They know we're coming. Some of the people agree with us. Some of the people are scared. They don't know what to think. They just know that this is a movement. They don't know how big it is. We need to make it big. We need to make it viral, because this thing is going to be won or lost in the court of public opinion. And ultimately, that's where it's at. I don't give a crap what kind of papers we write. If there's not enough people watching, they'll do with it whatever they want to do. The only way they'll behave is if the light stays on and the people keep watching. And the only way that's going to happen is people have to keep moving and keep filing and keep demanding, just like Moses, let my people go. That's what we got to do. We got to say, listen, we want to be free. We want to look in our court system. We, the people, are here to take back the government. Let us in the court. You know, unchain us and let us do what we have to do. And that needs to be a battle cry. We got to figure something out that can go viral across the nation. And it already is going viral across the nation, but we got to help it, and everybody has to do their part to disseminate this information.
All right, with that said, let's go to, you know, there's a lot of people with their toes in the water. They haven't gone forward to do the election, but they're kind of waiting, and I don't know what they're waiting for. It's time to go. We need help now. It's time for people in New York, particularly all the people in New York and the counties, that let's do it now. There's no reason you can't plan it for next week. And if we have to come, we'll come and work it with you and help you get this election going. But let's get the election going. Let's get the rest of the county sewed up in New York. But this is true across the country. We need to get moving on this. Excuse me. So we have to get our toes out of the water and jump in. Okay.
And listen, somebody said it's plug and play. I thought that was a very good thing. If you can follow the directions, we've pared it down. We've made it so easy. You don't have to go into every town and put your announcements. I mean, if you can't do this with three people, something's wrong. It's so easy. And the thing is don't worry about if you have enough people. It's that old thing. If you build it, they will come. So plug and play, follow the directions, and if you can't understand it, you give John or me a call, and we'll talk you through it. It doesn't take that much time.
Yeah, all you have to do is click on Jurist Orientation on the left side of the page right here. You're seeing it, and you come to read this page. Most of us, we all should have been through this already, unless you're new. But you go through all these videos and everything in here. But when you get to the end, the key thing is for details to start a grand jury, click here, and that's it. It's that simple right here. It's a 35-minute video on how to run the election and all the necessary paperwork right here. Download the zip file, and you'll have everything you need. Nothing very difficult, and anyone can do it.
I could tell you one thing. There are people out there that moved ahead that, like, just, you know, I was always one of those people that would read the back page of the novel before I read the rest of it, you know. It's like, so there's, I can tell by the questions that some people are asking that they didn't go through it, that they jumped ahead, that they're skipping steps because they're asking questions that they wouldn't be asking had they gone through the material. So I don't want to get down it.
It's extremely important. We put this together to orient people. So you got to go through the orientation if you haven't done it. You got to do it. And you shouldn't be going through the elections if you yourself have not been orientated. There's things here that you may know, and there's things here that you haven't, that you don't know, and you got to get the full picture. So, but anyway, we started going around the state. Okay, you want to say something? We started traveling around the state. Go ahead.
I guess I got a real lag between when I talk and you hear me.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that every time I've been in this for over 4 years now, but every time I click on something on that site and go to a new one, like the Lysander Spooner trial by jury tapes, there's not one time that I play another one of them tapes that I don't learn something new. So no matter how long, you'd be surprised how you pick up new information. It's unbelievable, and it's what makes it fun because it never gets boring because you can keep going. All right, I'll be quiet, John. You go ahead.
All right. Okay, anyway, we went around the state. We went to five counties, so we really didn't go all around the state. We stayed within our general area. I mean, there were only so many places we can hit in one day. We started early in the morning, and we didn't finish till 4:30 going on 5, and the last place we went to was closing, getting ready to close down, so we couldn't have any more. We did have originally about 8 stops we'd like to, but when we kind of plotted our course, we realized we could only do 5, and we would have done more if we could have pushed it a little faster and got another one or two in, but we couldn't. But that was enough to give us a really appreciation of what's going on. We walked into each county one at a time. We went to the courthouse, you know, the county courthouse, which is the Supreme Court in each county. We went up to the chief clerk's desk. We tried to bring the TV cameras in. None of them would let us do that. But we went up to each one of these places. We asked for access into the grand jury room. We were denied that access. After the first one, the second one, then they realized that they were, you know, they started to get onto the phones I guess warn the other counties. So as we started to arrive from, courthouse to courthouse, we would hear, I know I heard this once, and I know someone else had heard this in another place and mentioned it to me. I could tell you in Dutchess County, we got there, one of the officers went over to the phone, picked up the phone, and I heard him clearly say, they're here, we're going to be sending them up. And I know he said something else, Gerard, if you remember, you can pipe in here. I asked him clearly, I said, did you call up to the county clerk to let them know that we were here? And he said, oh, no, I didn't do that. So he actually lied to me. And we had a couple of lies because we found that every time we went up into these, up to the clerk's office, the police officers would also go up there. They'd be coming from different directions or whatever. I know the first county, we only had one there, and he was standing there watching us. And I asked him if he was asked to come here to watch us. I was just passing by. I'm listening. They just lied to us. We had one place. We had three or four cops that came up, and they kind of was in the room, and they were making sure that no one was using a camera or their phones. In fact, they were going to take a phone away from one person because they were taking pictures. All that was intimidation on the one end, but they really didn't push too hard on that. As a matter of fact, I believe we intimidated them. I'm convinced of that. I think they were, they didn't know what to say. They didn't know how to respond. I think we talked with authority, and they were just very quiet and cooperative and didn't give us a hard time. They answered our questions, but they wouldn't give us access. of course, they all blamed it on these judges, which was correct. We got to one place, they had totally abandoned this one woman, and she was the only one left in the office when we came up there. And she said everybody had left, for whatever reasons. But she was already copying some papers when we were asking, about access and so on and so forth. And she couldn't wait to give us this paper, which was the one from September 26th. It was an in-house memo that came out from Prudente's office that we were told that there was privileged memo and that it was not to be shared outside of the house, so to speak, and that even with the request, they wouldn't give it to us. So I don't know why this woman gave it to us. We kind of sensed she was kind of on our side and just wanted to give it to us. I don't know. But these people were pretty nice. As we were going, we asked a lot of questions, and they gave us answers. We came to realize that we shouldn't be chasing these clerks because ultimately they're hired help. They don't take an oath. They're not elected. And they could lose their job if they don't do what their boss tells them. And they're as dumb as we are. They're as dumbed down as we are, so they don't know. They don't understand the paperwork, so at least this one woman claimed. They don't read it, so they don't know. So we thought that it wasn't wise to really go after those people. We have a total of four judges. We started off with two. By the time we finished our rounds, we discovered there were four judges that were in the way of preventing us from getting access. And so we did hold off on filing the presentment the presentment on Friday. We were going to file it on Friday at the last place we stopped. But we felt it necessary to kind of get back together and talk with the others here in New York and make the point that we thought from our experience that it wouldn't be wise to go after these clerks. So we agreed on the four judges, and we agreed on numerous things, and we do have a plan. We wrote a letter, which we just finished off today, which we did post. It is up on the website. It's on the Juris Document page. And if you come down all the way down to the bottom, it's a letter to the judges. It was just posted just an hour or so ago. And we're going to send out a cover letter, a memorandum, to all the clerks and administrative judges in New York. And we're going to, of course, send a copy of the letters to those four judges. And they're going to be given a little more time. We're going to give them till the end of the week. We were thinking about filing on Tuesday, but then with this new letter and getting it out, you know, it just, I think we all agreed that it just wouldn't be right. So we're going to give them till the end of the week again. And, you know, we now know what their positions are and what their case is, which we're going to talk a little bit about. And we were able to write up a paper to, neutralize anything they had to say because they clearly did not understand the real law. When they read the Constitution, they did not understand the Constitution, and they were relying on a case, Wood versus Hughes, I think is the name of it, back in 61 here in New York. But that has been, that the whole idea and the premise and everything behind that has been overruled numerous times by the U.S. Supreme Court in many different ways. Not that that case itself has ever been overturned. I don't know. That could be overturned case. We're looking into that. And so we're looking to get access into a good service that we can find that information out on. Before I go any further, there were people, of course, that were with us, Gerard and myself and numerous other people. Anybody that wants to give a little bit of an experience or make a point on any of this, raise your hand and we'll give you the mic, those that came on the walk, the ride with us around the counties. At some counties, we had people. Orange County, we had a real big show. You know, there was maybe a half of a dozen of us or so, maybe more, riding around the from county to county. But we were met by other people in the counties who were their own counties to come into the court. So if anybody wants to share anything of their experience, raise your hand and we'll give them the mic. I don't see anybody. Keep an eye out, Gerard, if anybody raises their hand. So anyway, we wrote this paper, and I guess we should go through.
There's hands raised, but I don't.
Yeah, but they didn't come with us on the, what do you call it?
Okay, I'm sorry. Yep, yep, gotcha.
So we'll get them after we finish.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, well, we wrote a cover letter. We have this cover letter and the letter, which is attached to this, that's going out to the clerks. And basically, I'll just read real quick what the message was. On October 11, 2013, the Unified Grand Jury dispatched a small committee to five counties to test the access into the People's Court and was to file the same day indictments upon upon clerks and judges if access was not achieved. Although access was not achieved due to extenuating circumstances, the committee decided to call together the grand jury because it was observed by the committee that the clerks were under a stronghold by the judges. The grand jury, after hearing the report, agreed and decided that to indict the court clerks would be unjust, considering they were not elected or appointed and were acting under orders. You got to shut your mic off, Gerard. Acting under orders from judges and the threat of losing their employment. We also decided that the elected county clerks were not in a position to prevent or permit the people access into their buildings either. It is the intention of the grand jury to file indictments against the four judges. We named the judges. If they fail, to step aside by the end of the week. We ask that all the recipients of this memorandum read the attached letter in order that they understand the constitutional crisis America is facing. And so that's going to be the cover letter with a copy of the letter going to the clerks. Then underneath the letter itself, I'll go through some of this letter because I think it's important. You know, we likened this situation where we're at right now as that of what our founding fathers were up against. So we turned to the Declaration of Independence in order to write this first part of this letter. This letter is broken up into three parts. Basically, we give an open indictment in a letter form. It's only two pages. And then we go into their positions on how they have supplanted and supplanting and contempt of common law. And we discuss what it is, what their positions are that we have learned from a letter that they had written. And then the third part basically lays out by what authority we, the people of New York, act. So let me go through some of this quick. I don't know that I'm going to read all of it, but I'll read parts of it. So we start off here. The people of New York are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that's what the grand jury is. Whenever any appointed or elected servant becomes destructive of these ends, it is the duty, right, of the consenters, the grand jury, to remove such servants and appoint or elect new servants. Prudence indeed dictates that presentments against elected or appointed servants should not be charged for light and transient causes. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations find the people under absolute despotism, it is the right, it is the duty of the people to remove such disobedient servants and provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patience, sufferance of the people of New York, and such is now it may be necessary to charge the guard by a true bill. To prove this, let the facts be submitted to a candid world. Now, of course, we use the Declaration to frame this because we really felt it was very appropriate, and we took this through the whole process. Anyway, we named the four judges, and we go on. The judges, and I'm just going to say judges. I'm not going to read their names. The judges have and you can download this, as I said, up on our webpage there, Juris Documents. Judges have conspired to supplant the unalienable right of we the people to lawfully assemble as consenters under common cause to protect the unalienable rights of the people of New York as constitutionally prescribed and protected under the Fifth Amendment and other amendments. The judges have refused their assent to the law of the land and most wholesome and necessary for the public good. The judges have blocked the people's access to take their rightful seat as consenters. The judges have opposed the right of the people to consent or deny. The judges have obstructed the administration of justice by the people. The judges have obstructed the consenters' access to the court by conspiring, false reporting, reporting false charges, and issued orders to reject grand jury's filings to all New York County court clerks and county clerks. The judges have refused their power, have abused their power by filing false reports with the FBI in an effort to intimidate the people into submission. The judges have abused their power by sending the FBI on a fishing expedition in the hope of finding evidence that does not exist in order to charge the people with a crime. The judges have abused their powers by accusing the people of terrorist acts and causing them to be interrogated as such. The judges have lied to the elected clerks and to the counties of New York, clerks of the counties of New York and the employed clerks of the court of New York, claiming that the Fifth Amendment has been legislated away and therefore the people's right to consent is void, thus allowing the judges to continue in their acts of contempt of we the people. We have warned the judges of New York from time to time of the attempts by their administrative courts to not extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the law of the land and the duty to obey it, i.e., honor their oaths or hold their office, honor their oaths to hold their office in good behavior. We have appealed to the native justice and magnanimity they have been deaf to the cries of the injured for justice. We the people must therefore acquiesce in the necessity of holding them in contempt of natural law, a.k.a. common law. We therefore, the people of New York, assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of New York, solemnly publish and declare that New Yorkers are and of right ought to be free and sovereign people with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence. Now we get into their case and their position of what they have to say, and we deal with that. We go in a memorandum to all counties and the court clerks dated 9/26/13. That's the paper we were talking about, prepared by John McConnell and Paul McDonnell, counsel for the conspirators, giving their flawed opinion of law concerning the common law grand jury, claimed that New York Constitution Article 114 supplanted the common law powers of the grand jury. It is difficult to believe that all four judges and counsel could be so ignorant of the law as they face charges of high treason, whereas they rest in the following bogus claim. And this is what they claim. Although a New York State grand jury derives its authority in part from the state constitution and common law, the common law was only continued in New York subject to such alteration as the legislature shall make, quoting Woods versus Hughes. The legislator manifested a clear intent to supplant whatever common law powers the grand jury may have possessed. Now, what they did is they took the 14th Amendment, totally misunderstood it, and then combined it with a conclusion, the ruling of Wood versus Hughes, which were judges of the progressive influence. They had hidden agendas. And even the dissenting judges, I think, pretty much almost said that point, but they definitely cleared things up and talked about the error of that decision. But also U.S. Supreme Court has many times made many decisions that renders that particular decision null and void. And since the United States Supreme Court overrules any state court in matters of the Constitution, Woods and Hughes ultimately is null and void. But Woods and Hughes did not go as far as these people did in their conclusion when they made this statement. So let me read on. This is a gross misinterpretation of Article 1, Verse 14, which actually said, and I'm more paraphrased on this part of it, common law and the acts of legislature of the colony of New York, including resolutions and the conventions that formed the law on April 19, 1775, and in force on April 20, 1777, which have not since expired, been repealed, or altered, shall be and continue the law of this state. But all such common law acts or parts thereof as are repugnant to this Constitution, that was written on April 20th, 1777, are hereby abrogated and subject to such alterations as the legislators shall make concerning the same. They shall make whatever changes is necessary for the laws that they were living under between April 19th, 1775 through April 20th, 1777, 2 years period, the law that they used and anything during that time period by the time that the Constitution was completed that was repugnant to that Constitution that was completed on April 20th, 1777, that is what was subject to legislation that will make, that will abrogate and make the alterations in order to make sure that it is in harmony with the new Constitution. But the key words here is concerning the same. And I went on, we went on and said, in other words, on April 20th, 1777, when the Constitution was adopted, any laws in force from April 1975 through April 20th, 1777 that were repugnant to the April 20th, 1777 Commission Constitution were abrogated and therefore subject to alterations as the legislator shall make. And the key words was concerning the same. It does not claim that the legislators had authority to supplant the common law grand jury, nor would they be able to, as they would need to negate the Declaration of Independence that was only written a year before, and even more importantly, natural law, and by that action, they would be in contempt of God. Now, their claim to go back to is that the legislators was able to do this and intentionally supplanted common law powers of the grand jury. And, of course, that's not possible, nor did it say that. But it went on. We went on, and there was other things. Furthermore, the New York Constitution, Article 1, Subsection 6, which the statutory council has failed to cite, states the power of the grand jury to inquire into the willful misconduct in office of public officers and to find indictments or to direct the filing of information in connection with such inquiries shall never be suspended or impaired by law. So no one could suspend the power of the grand jury or impair the power of the grand jury by law. The New York judiciary without authority has negated this power of the people. The actions of the said conspirators clearly prove that their puppet statutory bar members, judges and prosecutors, control juries will never investigate or self-police criminally dishonest bar actions in the people's court that were designed for justice. Whereas the people are blocked from accessing we the people's independent common law grand juries to constitutionally redress their injuries and protect their rights from criminally malfeasant officials who act under color of law. It is an intolerable, tyrannical condition that will no longer be allowed to continue. Furthermore, with the support of the view of Wood versus Hughes, Judge Fossell, writing in dissent, said, "The practice continued in New York as part of our common law down to the time of the adoption of our first constitution in 1777. In other words, the grand jury had continued and of course passed it. And indeed to this present day, in that constitution was provided that such parts of the common law of England and of the acts of the legislature of the colony of New York as together did form the law of the said colony on April 1775, shall be and continue the law of the state subject to such alterations and provisions as the legislature of the state shall from time to time make concerning the same. That provision has remained in a constitution to the present time, Article 114, lest the grand jury's power at common law to file reports is not a mooted question. Therefore, it's not debatable. It's not arguable. It's a fact. It is what it is. Nor may we rightfully neglect the common law, as the majority would have us do." Chief Justice Desmond also dissents, saying, "Insomuch as the legislator has not changed the common law right of grand juries to make presentments, how can we say they are now unauthorized? Looking to the decisions of other states will not help us, for they are governed by their own laws, nor will it serve any useful purpose to review the conflicting decisions of our courts of the first instance, many of which do not deal with the precise problem before us. As it is true that the grand jury in this state derives its power from our Constitution, including the common law incorporated therein, and our statutes, and in the absence of a clear constitutional legislative expression, they may not be curtailed. In our first Constitution, no reference was made to the grand jury, and it thus continued as at common law. In subsequent constitutions, the grand jury is recognized, but its power to make presentments for the information of the public has never been abrogated, either by constitution or by statute, and so it remains to this day." Clearly, the actors that contrived the majority decision of Wood versus Hughes were progressives with a concealed motive to place motive in place of justice. We, the people of the Unified Common Law Grand Jury, are acutely aware of the widely practiced fictional venue that defrauds the people daily. And now we, the people, intend on reclaiming our heritage so robbed by progressives. The suggestion that common law could be supplanted from we, the people, which is based on the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, as well as the United States Constitution, places these conspirators into the highest form of dishonor. for not to recognize those unalienable rights is to say that this state and nation are no longer under control of those sublime documents. Having been abrogated by the opinion of progressive judges and legislators, and that the people that are no longer sovereign consenters but slaves to the enemy's interests. When it was discovered that the NSA was monitoring all communications last year, the administration's quip was, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about. We have to ask ourselves what is going on that our government's officials would fear the people, that's the grand jury, looking into things. For them to so vigorously resist the will and the right of the people to impanel a common law grand jury for and by the people to investigate, we the people in like fashion so say, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to worry about. The grand jury's historic function survives to this day. Its responsibility continues to include both the determination of whether there is probable cause to believe a crime has been committed and the protection of the citizens against unfounded criminal prosecutions, United States versus Calandria. We the people caution you, our public servants, to seek well your counsels. As judges, you are expected to know the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, and why the Bill of Rights was written, as well as the statutes protecting why we the people. The true sovereign authority have a right to bring people's oversight any time it is required under the law of necessity. Be advised that your continued blocking of we the people's unalienable right, protected under the Fifth Amendment, to consent or not to your actions will have regrettable judicial consequences. For it is unconscionable for government officials to control a grand jury or tell them that anyone is immune to their examinations. Therefore, step aside now while we can still offer you grace. Now we went into the last part of this letter, which I think is only a couple more pages, and it covers by what authority we the people of New York Act. We the people have the sole authority to constitute and administrate grand juries as an unalienable right secured by the Fifth Amendment. In the majority opinion of U.S. versus Williams, we read, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. So our founding fathers understood that it was an unalienable right and put it in its proper place. The people have a right to claim and exercise without government interference, sanction, or penalty their unalienable rights protected under the Fifth Amendment. Clearly, legislators and judges have no authority to alter unalienable rights, as Judge Gail Pudente and the other three judges, here and after conspirators, shamelessly claim. Nor can said rights be licensed or turned into a crime. The people have the unalienable right to act as grand jurists independent of either prosecuting attorney or judge. And by the way, everything we say here, we've got quite a few footnotes here. We're backing everything up. You can see we do put our footnotes, 5 and 6 and so on. Therefore, the conspirators' arrogant denial after being warned to step aside so that the people may take their proper seat as consenters within their own brick-and-mortar buildings will not be tolerated. Such a servant is in dishonor and in breach of their oaths and is no longer constitutionally fit to serve. Furthermore, the conspirators' feeble position is nullified by the following. So not only did they misunderstand, not only was part of the decision of Wood versus Hughes grossly violated our unalienable rights, and the two dissenting, well, there was actually three dissenting judges, two of which made it clear, and we also saw how it was a misunderstanding of interpretation of Article 1's Section 14, I think it was, of New York State Constitution, and where they failed to even look at Article 1, Subsection 6, which clearly said it will never be able to be taken away by law or anything.
I don't think it was a misunderstanding. I think they're snakes, and they twisted it to mean that, like Clinton, what is the meaning of it? When so he reads it, you'll understand what they did.
Anyway, their feeble position is nullified by the following also. The Supremacy Clause nullifies the whole thing. This Constitution, and by the way, well, let's go through the Supremacy Clause. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made in which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state, let me repeat that part, because they seem to think they don't have to listen to whatever the federal courts say. The judges in every state, and this is the Constitution, the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, in other words, the state constitutions, to the contrary, notwithstanding. So anything that's repugnant to the Constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Prohibitions, is null and void. Thus, now this is Marbury versus Madison, and this was decided in 1803. It's the most quoted case, I understand, in judicial history. And has never been even considered close to being overturned. Thus, the particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principles supposed to be essential to all written constitutions, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void. And that court, as well as other departments, are bound by that instrument. So after more than 200 years, this decision still stands. If any statement within any law which is passed is unconstitutional, the whole law is unconstitutional. Now, a lot of this comes right out of the American Jurisprudence Handbook for Judges, or book that the judges are to obey. Judges are giving rules in this book. It's the American Jurisprudence, and they must obey it. Even if their ideas or positions is different from the judges that have put together this book, they still have to hold to the positions of the judges of this book, because it reflects the decisions of the United States Supreme Court over the past 200 years. And it was written in order for judges to guide these judges to make good rulings. And so we're going to read a lot of that. Since the Constitution is intended for the observance of the judiciary as well as for other departments of government, and the judges are sworn to support its provisions, the courts are not at liberty to overlook or discharge its commands or counteract evasions thereof. It is their duty in authorized proceedings to give full effect to the existing Constitution and to obey all constitutional provisions, irrespective of their opinion as to the wisdom or the desirability of such provisions, and irrespective of the consequences. Thus, it is said that the courts should be in our alert to enforce the provisions of the United States Constitution and guard against their infringement by legislative fiat, or otherwise in accordance with these basic principles. The rule is fixed that the duty in the proper case to declare a law unconstitutional cannot be declined and must be performed in accordance with the delivered judgment of the tribunal before which the validity of the enactment it is directly drawn in question. If the Constitution prescribes one rule and the statutes the other in a different rule, it is the duty of the court to declare that the Constitution and not the statute governs in cases before them for judgment. Now, that's in the American Jurisprudence book for judges. The state did not give the people their right and thus cannot take them away as it chooses. The state did not establish and settle maxims and procedures by which people must be dealt and thus cannot abrogate or circumvent them. It thus is well settled that legislative enactments do not constitute the law of the land, but must conform to it. Now, again, here we go back to American jurisprudence book. Yeah, here it comes back to that. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. It is impossible for both the Constitution and a law violating it to be valid. One must prevail. This is succinctly stated as follows. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and the name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment, and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it, as unconstitutional law in legal contemplation is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question that it purports to settle just as it would be had the statute not been enacted. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone. It affords no protection and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing valid law. Indeed, insofar as the statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey it, an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. Every judge in the United States, whether on the federal level or any state, must obey these rules. These are Supreme Court rulings. This book was put together to guide them in their decision making. And they are in contempt of this book. They are in contempt of the people. They are in contempt of the Constitution. And they are in contempt of God. Any court, government, or government officer who acts in violation of, in opposition or contradiction to, the foregoing, by his or her own action, commits treason and invokes the self-executing Section 3 and the 4, Section 3 and 4 of the 14th Amendment, and vacates his or her office. It is the duty of every lawful American citizen to oppose all enemies of this nation, foreign and domestic. It has become clear that many judges are destructive to the people's American heritage, minions in fact of the progressive movement. Conscious or not, they are determined to expunge the work of our founding fathers. They have captured our courts. They are hell-bent on destroying honor and justice. They have been taught and believe that common law has been legislated away because it is passé, when in fact legislators are not empowered with that authority. That power is reserved only to the governor of the universe. Unalienable rights from God equals common law enforced by people. Privileges from our legislators, self-proclaimed masters, equal rules and statutes that control people's behavior, enforced by minions in fact. The common sense, common law conclusion is that any statute, code, rule, decision, or state constitution that is repugnant to the Bill of Rights is null and void. We, the people, demand access to our brick-and-mortar building and will grace you until Friday, October 18, 2013, to obey by notifying us by fax. Failure to step aside will force us to file true bill for obstruction, contempt, treason, and numerous other charges. Respectfully, Administrator, Unified New York Court Jury, Grand Jury. And we labeled this the letter of reason. And so we had read through all seven pages, and that is what we are going to be sending out to the news. The battle has been engaged, and it is now time to notify all news medias everywhere possible. So we ask everybody here to start spreading the word, sending it out to anybody and everybody. Now is the time that we need to focus on New York and what's going on. That is why we went down to the news media in Manhattan, and we're going to be going back down there again. And that is why we got a journalist that is also working with us from Connecticut. And she'll be handling a lot of the stories and controlling the news. We're going to send all news media. She has the exclusive. And we're going to send all news media to her. And that'll be the same throughout the entire country. Anybody has, we'll get that posted this week, exactly where to send people if the news media wants to know any more information. This letter might be the perfect thing to send out. As a matter of fact, we know it is. It's the perfect thing to set out. It sets the stage, the position, and it tells the story. And it lays it out clearly. And the people will see it, and the people will understand, and they will stand up with us. But we have to get this word out. And we are going to file the indictments. If they don't allow us into that room on Friday, by Friday, the end of the week, we're going to file the indictment. It's really a presentment, which is a true bill. We're going to file a presentment, which is a true bill, with the court. And we have other plans beyond that. You know, there's numerous things that could take place, you know, A, B, or C. And we're not going to talk about that. We will only talk about those things as they unfold. And as we get past certain points, we may talk about some of the things we had considered. But it has to be passed. Obviously, it's not wise to bring those things up at this point in time. And so all of the grand juries throughout the entire country, I believe, the entire nation, shall I say, the United States, really, I think, is resting on the war that is being fought right here in New York right now. I'm trying to think if there's anything else, Gerard, we should cover before we open up the mics. I think we pretty much covered most of it. There was a situation I know someone had asked and had come up before, and it may be in the minds of people we want to kind of squash it. There was an individual in Florida who started a grand jury and had filed papers in May of 2013. We were just starting in May of 2013. Some people have tried to connect that individual with us. They have learned nothing from us. If they did, they would not have went through to follow up what they did follow up after May. They acted in ignorance, not understanding common law. They acted in ignorance, not understanding court procedure and the judicial process. They acted in ignorance, thinking that they can get someone out of jail that was in jail. I don't know whether they personally knew about it. They lied, committed perjury, and they did numerous other things. They have nothing to do with us. We don't teach anything that they've done. They acted from outside the court. They claimed themselves to be something, and they never even took it to the people, and it has nothing to do with us. So that problem down in Florida is not connected to us in any way. We don't subscribe to anything that they've done, and they clearly don't subscribe to anything that we teach. Our teachings rest on two three principles and two maxims. And those three major principles is that we are to act in honor and in justice and with mercy. And that is the principles that we must act upon. We must be humble, and we have to listen to all sides. Even if we think we know the side, it doesn't matter. We listen. These judges want to sit and talk to us. We think we know. No, we'll listen. But then we will rule and decide, discover for them what they need to do in order to obey the people. Anything else we want to add, Gerard, to this before we open the mics?
Just a couple of things here. Not necessarily adding to that, but I'm getting a couple of questions that have rearing their head.
Go right ahead.
And one of them is about that old question about how does I thought the 14th Amendment made the Bill of Rights not apply to the states. We've answered this many times. And another guy also here says the Bill of Rights is not part of the Constitution, just an amendment. They actually preceded it. Now, we've answered these questions.
Right. Yeah, the Bill of Rights is part of the body of the Constitution. It was an after process that they did. Jefferson pushed very hard for it. I read about it in his autobiography, and he insisted that the people get a Bill of Rights. Thank God that he did, and thank God others went along with this, because it is the Bill of Rights that has kept America free all these 200 years, especially the last 100 years. The Bill of Rights is part of the body of the Constitution and comes forward. If there was an amendment, the whole process of the body and the Bill of Rights, all one parcel ultimately, comes forward. You know, the Constitution tells the government the things that they can do, and the Bill of Rights tells them what they can't do. And that's the bottom line. Our rights are unalienable. We are above the Constitution. We, the people, did ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. And so, therefore, we're above it. The United States of America is below it. All legislators are below it. They cannot legislate any behavior of the people. And now, all the amendments that came in after the Bill of Rights, you have the 11th Amendment and so on, a lot of them are questionable. They're suspect, in my opinion. We've seen a lot of problems. It is true that probably the 14th Amendment, well, there's no doubt about the 14th Amendment, was written by the progressive enemy in order to try to destroy it. But remember, they were talking in those cases of those who would allow themselves to be in subject to the United States. But we, the people, are not subject to the United States. And then they play their little word game and word magic. Lord willing, we get to the end of this game and we take back that which belongs to the people, then we're not going to have to worry about all that word magic. And if someone wants to call themselves a citizen, then, well, that's fine, because you're not going to be defrauded for doing that. Or if they want to, there's a lot of different words, you know, that we're very careful in court not to use, because it brings us over to the fiction side of the court, which is the jurisdiction. But I want to tell you, these people are so fraudulent, they bring everybody, no matter how hard or how much you make your points in your case, to stay outside of that fiction. Unless their flesh is on the line, and that's the only way you win, you got to put their flesh on the line. You got to sue them back. You got to make them face, jail time, and also payment, to repair you as a person. You're going to sue them for a monetary sum. And unless they're facing that and come to the serious realization of that, you're not going to get anywhere in court. So every time you go to court, first thing you got to do is you got to fight the judge. And you got to fight tooth and nail, and you got to put his flesh onto the line, let him know you're going to sue. And you got to start the process as you go through your court case. Very rarely can you get through in any other way. The town courts are a little easier, actually. And the family court we found quite easy because they're so far off the planet. They don't want no one to see what's going on in there. They just want to get rid of you quick if you know how to make a big splash in there. But anyway, what was the next?
John, Roger Dowell said, who authored the letter, and do we have access, if needed, to the author? Somebody else also asks, who's that signature of the grand jury administrator? And, well, we need to adjust that. First of all, this letter was authored by all of the ones who participated of the grand jury. We've been having special meetings, and we've been setting up a URL that was only to the people that were in New York in the grand jury, so not anybody could get into them. You needed an invitation. And we worked on this thing. Matter of fact, I took off of work today at 3 o'clock, and we spent another, for 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, we must have been in there 3 hours, yeah, hammering
it
out.
Plus, the other night, we went over it for a very long period of time. So this is not any one man's effort, and there's no one man that we can point to that this is the people. And, I mean, I have stepped up to the plate to stick my face on camera, and I only did that because my face is already on camera because I'm somewhat of known around these parts. You know, I was in public office, and I'm a volunteer fireman, so I'm not hiding. And, you know, the grand jury is supposed to be, not known. We don't normally give television interviews, but, you know, we have to have a spokesperson. And we're sticking these media people that were given the exclusive story sort of out front. And I'm the next one down that's out front only because I happen to know about it. But I'm no more a leader than you are or anybody else is in here. Yeah, somebody has to step up at the county. You have your four main people. But, you know, as far as trying to say who's doing this or what's it, listen, it's...
It all boils down to the 12 people in that room or the 25 people in that room as grand. That's what it boils down to. And the moment you start getting orders from on top is the moment we became a top-down organization, and it's time to leave it.
Right. So I just wanted to let that out there.
Any other questions out there in the text before we move on to the hands?
you got lots and lots of hands that popped up there. Okay. We have some punctuation critiques that we missed that they want to know if we'll fix them before it goes out. Yeah, we can fix them.
Well, no, there's no time to fix them because we're going to move to that next step now. And look, at their stuff is far worse than ours. And we're not going to make it that perfect with the punctuation. Sometimes we even have a battle between two people who really know punctuation. So, but yeah, we've done the best we can. We need to go out. We can't waste. These people need to have this letter tomorrow, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But maybe we should talk about this. Well, look it. Let me ask you a question. How can we find out? How many people are in here from New York and have a fax machine? That's what we need to know. How can we find that out? Is there a way to get that in the text chat? Maybe people in the text chat can put that out and say, yes, I have a fax. I'm in New York.
Well, either that or you go through the hands or have them put their hands down and put them back up. I mean, we'll lose the order if we do the hand thing. They could put them in. I guess anybody who has a text chat, if I clear the text chat out, I guess you could put in "I do, I do, I do." If you're willing to fax stuff,
we need people to help us fax. I see two people already put in there. I see three, I see four. Anybody with fax machines, please just let us know in the text chat. Five, any more? We need to fax these letters out. They need to go to 62 locations, and we need to break that up to those people. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We got 6.
Yeah.
If we can get maybe another 5 more, we'll be good. If we have to, we'll go outside of New York. Anybody else in New York that has a fax? 7. Is that right? Am I right on my count there?
I don't know.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We got 9. Can we get a couple of more? Nine, I saw so far. Well, you can go to, got 10 now. You can go to Staples, but the problem with going to Staples is they charge a lot of money. Okay, we got enough. If anybody else wants to add on, that's fine. Gerard, make sure you swipe this list, and we're going to give those people, before you leave the room, we're going to wait a little while. We're going to talk to a few people for an hour, and then we're going to go back to giving out who needs to be faxed to. And anybody else that, by myself, send them to me. Okay, Michael. Michelle, I'm sorry. Okay, so we have a lot of people here. Swipe that list. Can you do that, Gerard? Or save that list?
I did save it. I saved it to the file that it's...
Okay, let's go to questions. In about 40 minutes or so, we're going to go to those people, and we'll start to tell them which needs to be done. First of all, if you go to NationalLibertyAlliance.org, click on Jurist Documents. Down on the bottom, you see letters to the judges. Click on that. Download that. That's what's going to be faxed. New York County Clerk fax numbers. Click on that. Download that. That's where you're going to get the phone numbers from. We will go through that list in a short while, and we'll see who's going to do what counties, and we'll try to get through that quickly. That shouldn't take. I kind of got a little plan here on this, and that shouldn't take us any more than maybe 10 minutes to go through that. Okay, meanwhile, let's get to the questions. Who's first, Ron?
Start on the bottom, Diane. Diane Sabatine. She's had her hand up the longest.
I don't see Diane.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. What happened? Her hand went away? Oh, it went down. Okay, so now it's
Well, let's try Diane, see if she wants to talk.
Oh, well, she disappeared when I clicked on her.
Okay. All right, who's next?
Johnny B. Michael. Here, I'll undo him.
Johnny B. Michael, go right ahead.
Okay. Mic's open. Hello, Johnny B. Michael.
He's trying to talk.
Johnny, be quiet.
If that's him, he's very, very low.
Hang on, man. Let's see if that fixes.
go take that stuff.
How you doing, Johnny? You there? All right, well, we lost Johnny. We'll try him back in a little while. Well, let's see if we can unmute that. No, he's got himself muted on the phone. Let me see. We may have to give him a number. Auto PIN not entered. Send auto PIN. There's your auto PIN. Okay, try it, Johnny. You're unmuted. Go ahead. Johnny, you there?
Hey, mother.
You're here. Go ahead. Go ahead, Johnny. All right, let's go to someone else while he's trying to get his mic fixed. You can raise his hand when he gets that going. Who's next, Gerard? Okay, Gerard went away. Let me go to Harold. Harold, go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Harold?
Yes, hello. Hello, John.
Hey, by the way, do you have a you have a fax machine? Yeah. Could you take care of the four judges to fax those four judges the letter without the cover page?
No problem.
Okay. Hang out towards the end, and we'll go through that. Well, actually, you already got your job. You just take care of that. You know who the four judges are. You just got to get their fax numbers. I know we have Prudentes, and if you have to, you can do some of them. Care of her, I guess. And you got the copy of the letter we wrote, so that's ready to go.
You know Harold will do it right. Don't worry about it.
I know. So go ahead, Harold. You got a question or a comment?
What I did this time, I realized you put it somewhere else. Originally, I went to, from after the afternoon, we had a document, and also you said, like at the beginning of this webinar, you said that you posted it already like an hour before. So right. I went to the website, went for New York, thinking that you put it there.
No,
but
I didn't.
Apparently,
no.
It's a copy. You put it in this new place.
Right.
Print that now.
Okay.
Okay, no problem. Okay, all right, so that's the only thing I see. I have to check that over, too. Other than that, it looks pretty good.
Okay. If you want the word form of it, I'll email it to you.
Give me an email, too, just so I make sure I have it right.
Let me make a note. I'll email it to you.
I get with software, I have a fax program that my computer can fax them out.
Oh, you have a fax program?
Yes.
And you can feed in all the numbers, and it'll fax them all out?
Yeah, I did Congress, 435.
Really?
Both the House of Representatives and the Senate. Took 2.5 days, though.
Yeah, I can imagine. You know, but you can you feed in, like, 62 numbers and push a button, and it'll fax them all out?
It won't be the same day.
Okay, we need to get them out tomorrow. So. All right, just take care of those four. We got enough volunteers
Michael.
Now to get the rest out.
Michael Formoso says, John, I could do half by myself. Send them to me.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk to them at the end in 40 minutes or so.
Yeah.
So you have a fax list of not only the judges, but you have all the clerks. I think you had it on
Yeah, we have the county clerks. We never found the court clerks. So we're faxing them to the county clerks, who are responsible to get it out to the court clerks, and they'll be responsible, really, to get it out to everybody as we put in the facts, you know, as we put in the memorandum page.
All right, no problem.
Okay, so you take care of that four, and we'll get the rest of the people to take care of the rest. But go ahead with your comment or question or whatever you want to say.
Okay, if anything falls through the cracks and can't happen, let me know about it, and I'll take care of it. I'll fax them.
All right, that sounds good. All right, is there anything else you want to talk about?
That's it. I'm done. Okay. I'm deciding. Let me to decide.
All right.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thank you.
You're
welcome. All right. Who's next, Rod?
Daryl, I believe. Let me undo him. Go ahead, Daryl.
Yes, I'm here. A couple things. On the county organizer page at the bottom, there's a PowerPoint presentation. and it's called The Power of the Grand Jury.
Yeah, I haven't updated that in a long time.
Okay. Because it won't open.
Okay. Where is it located? Tell me again.
County organizers at the bottom of the page.
Organizers. Okay, I'll put up the latest one. I'll try to remember to do that tomorrow for the PowerPoint, okay?
Okay.
And we have that both in video, and we have it in regular PowerPoint use where the person can talk instead of, being played on video. So we'll put both up, but go ahead.
That'd be great. Another thing, I received a confirmation from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that if a veteran is registered as a patient or as part of the VA hospital, that they do comply with Obamacare and they do not have to register or go under their laws.
They don't have to register or go where?
Excuse me. It says that, let me just read the notice. It'll be easier for me than to try and paraphrase. It says, information about health care law. The health care law was created to expand access to affordable health care coverage to all Americans, low cost, and improve quality and care coordination. Under the health care law, people will have health care coverage to meet minimum standards called minimum essential coverage by January 1st, 2014. Qualify for an exemption or make a payment when filing for taxes if they have affordable options but remain uninsured. Enrollment in the VA health care and the health care law coverage requirements. You are enrolled in the VA health care system, which means you have health care coverage that meets the standards under the health care law.
All right. Well, again, the Obamacare bill is unconstitutional and it's not going to be held up. And once we get back to freedom again, everybody will be able to afford, everybody that's working will be able to afford health care on their own and be able to go wherever carrier they want. So we don't want to get lost in the politics of that. All right. Anything else?
The main reason I brought that up is it will also avoid the penalties if you do not register by the January 1st, 14.
All right.
That was the main reason I was bringing it up.
Yeah, what, are the people got to register somewhere, you're saying, or who's got to register?
Yes, according to this, if you don't have the coverage that they require, which some of it is very ridiculous, like paternity coverage for people regardless of their age.
Yeah, but that's not going to apply. Once we get things going here, and what state are you in?
Missouri.
Missouri. Well, once you get things going in Missouri and you get the common law grand jury takes power, it's not going to apply there either. So it's nothing we're going to worry about. So, but I appreciate the information. Anything else?
Well, other than that, I did go to a Tea Party meeting last Thursday. And it looks like I've got about 12 people that are interested, and they're supposed to be checking out the website and getting back with me.
Great. Yeah, the key thing, get them to the front page and watch the video, Power the Grand Jury. That seems to sell most of the people. So.
Yeah, it looks like I did make one mistake, though. I told them it was nationallibertyalliance.com instead of .org.
Yeah, I think we have .com also, and it goes to .org. I'm pretty sure we do. I'll have to check, but I'm pretty sure I bought both. So.
Okay, great, because it always directs me to .org. Yeah. I just wasn't sure if it did anybody else.
Yeah, we'll try that right now. I'm pretty sure it does. I think we own both. And, yep, it goes there. It's there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, that's all I had, and thank you guys. I am glad that you're making progress in New York, and hopefully the presentation will straighten out these politicians.
Well, yep, judgment. We're going to straighten them all out. Look at once we get into, they know with this big splash, once they're in, everybody's going to start behaving because they have no choice because they know the people are watching now. So, and that's the key. We're not on a witch hunt. We want them to obey the law and do it from this point forward. Whatever is in the past is in the past unless someone brings it to our attention and we have to deal with a situation where a person comes in and they have to be restored. So, all right, now, anything else?
Yes. Is it at the point now that, did I understand you right, that we can start talking about the trouble you're having and that kind of stuff?
What do you mean?
Should we be informing anyone about the TV?
Right. You can get the story out to anybody. Anybody that wants to talk to get more information. At this point, I guess the best place for them to go would be to our site contact. And they can click on press agent here. And matter of fact, just tell them. Don't send them to the site. Tell them. Just send an email to pressagent@nationallibertyalliance.org, and make sure they include their phone number in there, and someone will call them back. So for everybody, make a note of that. pressagent@nationallibertyalliance.org, and make sure that they put their phone number in there. And someone will get back to them. Okay?
Okay.
I'll leave this on the screen for a little while so people can see it. pressagent@nationallibertyalliance.org. All right. Anything else?
I believe that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Daryl. Who's next, Gerard?
Let me see here. It looks like Terry. Terry Rapp.
Okay, unmute him, I guess.
Go ahead, I'll unmute him. Yeah, you're unmute him,
okay.
Go ahead, Terry.
Here I am if my mic's working.
Yeah, you're a little loud, but you're okay. Go ahead.
Well, let me go to the other room and
holler. Maybe the other guy was low, so let's see how that goes. Go ahead.
Okay, I don't think I was low, but okay. I was just curious if anybody has had any direct communication with any of the four judges.
No.
If anybody has spoken with them
directly. They don't want to talk to us. They want us to talk to their counsel. They're dying to get us into court so they could deal with us there. But, no, we have not had direct contact. We have sent them letters. We don't send them to the judge, to the lawyers, and we're going to send them now directly to them, whatever they want to do. We're not going to talk to lawyers for them. Our servants should not talk to us through lawyers. Who the hell do they think they are to come to us, talk to the people, their bosses with a lawyer? Can you imagine what would happen if I was employed by someone, okay? If I was employed by someone and my boss wanted to talk with me, and I brought my lawyer and said, hey, talk to him. I mean, who the hell are these people? I mean, that's insane. No. Anyway, anything else, Terry?
Well, I was just curious because, if they don't know that we truly are legitimate, I mean, what if they, if their concept is that we're as crazy as the people I'm afraid of?
Well, here's the thing, okay? We've done this in the open. Every county that has done the election and those going to do the elections now, and every county, we've taught everyone throughout the country, this is how you, the nation, this is how you do it. We took out ads in the newspapers. We notified the people of the county that there was going to be a presentment and an election to reinstate the common law grand jury here in this county. People were invited by phone calls and so on. So people came, they collected, they came, they heard the presentment, they voted, and overwhelmingly said yes. There are people who did affidavits, there are three affidavits at every single one of these. Plus we did a presentment of the Constitution of a common law grand jury here in the county of, and in whatever state you were here in the county of. And it was filed with the county clerk, even though we rejected most of them. And it's filed with the court clerk. It's all done in the open. And it's not just here in this corner. In New York, it's in Suffolk County, Nassau County, Queens County, Richland County, King County, New York, Rockland, Westchester, Putnam, Orange, Sullivan, Ulster, Dutchess, Greene, Columbia, Schenectady, Niagara, and more coming behind it. So this isn't just a couple of people in the corner. This is the people taking their country back.
I understand. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
fully,
but if they can't
100%
figure
on our
that
side.
Out, if they can't figure that out and they're that dumb, they don't belong in office or in the positions that they're holding. They need to go.
Well, just playing devil's advocate, though. If it didn't hit their desk, they're dumb.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I'm just curious, though, that if anybody had, you know, spoken directly to them, that they were aware of you know, our virtuous intent, or if they think that we're just some, you know, schemers that are going to try and overthrow the government with
right.
some kind of
well,
deal.
Let me just say, the first thing they did, we sent paperwork, we announced ourselves, as John said, and actually the response that we got from the court was they sent the FBI out numerous three, four, or five different places, and the FBI did talk to us, and in every one of those cases, the FBI says, I don't see anything wrong here, and they left. But nevertheless, they turned us over to the FBI as if we were a terrorist group. And so they know by now that those are unfounded reports. They've scoured our paperwork looking for anything they could find that would put us in a box where they could prosecute us or arrest us for usurping a court or whatever, and I'm sure they're waiting for more stuff. They know we're coming. You know, when the judge sent out that form letter to everybody, you know, we responded to that, and she responded back with her attorneys. So,
and I'm sure there's someone. I'm sure they're in this room right now, anyway.
Oh yeah. Listen, they know we're coming. They know who we are. They know. Listen, we're not hiding. We're all, you know, we're all over the place, and they certainly should know what we're all about. You know, I mean, even those people in the courtroom in your own town, in your own county. You know, I know the people that are in here. They know who I am. They know I'm not anybody. You know, I'm a volunteer fireman for 22 years, you know?
Right.
And I'm known in my community. I don't fit the profile of any kind of terrorist unless you go with the new thing, which says that Grandma and Apple Pie is terrorist because we know she's got weapons of mass destruction baked in those pies, you know, and that kind of baloney. But that's, you know, other than that kind of extremist.
And those crazy founding fathers of us, of ours,
well,
boy, were they
there's
right.
no reason for them not to know who we are, where we're coming from, or what we're talking about. My goodness, you know, we're on the radio, we're on talk radio. We've been into all the Tea Party movements. We've been touring the state. I mean, if they don't know who we are, that's pretty sad. You know, they're telling us they're watching everybody and everything, and yet they don't know who we are. I don't believe it.
Well, I certainly hope that that's the case, that they are as scurrilous as we believe them to be. I was just hoping that there was one attempt at a good faith meeting of the minds.
The FBI.
Well, you know what? The ball's been in their court. We sent them stuff, and they certainly could have had set up a meeting had they wanted it.
Now, when their attorneys responded, the attorneys, did they respond directly to you, or did they respond back to the clerks of court and stuff?
Both.
Both.
They,
yeah.
The attorneys signed the letter that the judge gave to the clerks, and then
they
wrote separate
letters to us. You know,
to us.
Subtle,
and they,
but
and basically what they said is, you better be careful because this could have what do they call it? The same words we use in there.
Right, we use their words.
Unfortunate legal consequences or some such crap that they try to intimidate us with.
Okay. Well, I'm unfortunate, but that's good to hear. So. I think we're justified. I just wanted to make sure that we,
yeah,
you know, that we were.
I would say as an administrative judge, to not know who we are and what we're doing would border on incompetence because, you know, we've been out there long enough and they certainly have their resources. And they call the FBI, and I'm sure they got a real good report about who we are, what we're doing, maybe names and dates and faces, who knows. But, you know, if they wanted to talk, they could have got a hold of any one of us. John's number's on the website. They had no trouble right away putting down American, you know, National Liberty Alliance. They threw that out immediately.
Yes.
So if you go to National and Liberty Alliance, there's contact information there. You know,
and they know we
and
have
we know every terrorist group has contact information on their site. We
is,
know that.
Is there a representative of the courts or the law enforcement here in this room now that would like to talk? If so, kind of blink your hand up and down, and we'll open the mic for you. So if that happens, you know, let them know. But let me read this. It says, this is the what they wrote in the letter, and they write this in every letter, but they only wrote us two. We strongly recommend that you obtain the advice of legal counsel and take further steps in this matter, both to assure the prompt resolution of any claim you might have in an appropriate legal forum. So they want us to go to court. And to avoid actions of threats which might have regrettable legal consequences. We're not threatening anyone. We're telling them what we're going to do if they don't stop violating our unalienable rights and allow us to have access. They don't want to talk about that. They want us to go to court so some judge can get up there and decide. And judges are not to decide. Only the tribunals, the people, are to decide. And that's
right.
What we're going to let them know.
Okay, and I want to clear the air. I'm not a police officer. I don't play one on the radio.
Okay.
I'm one of us in Arizona, and we're getting this thing rolling out here. So.
Okay.
Get it going, because this has got to be a nationwide thing. It's the answer to our problem.
It's a people thing. It boils down to 12 people in a room or 25 people in a room in your town, state, county, or whatever. That's what it boils down to be, making the decisions as necessary. They don't want that. Okay, thank you. And they don't want that. Okay, who's next, Jerron?
Hang on here.
That was Terry Rapp, right?
Terry Rapp.
Right. That was Terry Rapp is next, or is that who we just spoke to?
Oh, I don't. That was on the bottom. I don't know.
Yeah, I just took his mic.
That Terry, that was
you, Terry, wasn't it?
Yes, I was on just.
Yes, that was Terry.
So, so then it's going to be Ricky. We'll close to that. We'll open Ricky.
Well, I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Rick.
Okay, great. Well, the first thing I keyed on was the 14th Amendment.
Right.
And this that may be a part of your problems, too, with the people you're dealing with, and that they think they're operating under.
Yeah, they can think that, but we made it clear in our papers who and what we are. We're the people. We're not citizens of their little private corporation that they want to get us involved with. We're not part of that. We don't want no
Do you think it would be helpful or necessary or meaningless to file an affidavit with the court asserting?
We have filed many of affidavits with
the
court.
Oh, you have done that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we have done three for every county. And we've done we've done a declaration, and we delivered it to the clerks of the court and the clerks of the county. And we let them know that a common law grand jury had been constituted in that county. We let them know exactly what we were looking to do and everything we did to get to there.
John?
Yeah.
Actually, I was wondering about the possibility of me doing it.
You were wondering why?
You guys, filing an affidavit or whatever with the courts here in Florida.
You guys should be doing the same thing in Florida. We're teaching people to do it that way.
Okay, good.
We have, if you go up to our website, we give instructions on how to form a common law grand jury in your county, and it's only a 35-minute video and a download of some, of files, and all the papers are, just fill-in-the-blank type things.
Right. I've got to re-download the zip file. To make sure I'm current on everything. But I think I've got the paperwork I'm going to need for my election day after tomorrow.
Okay.
You mentioned a rogue grand jury. That wouldn't be in Ocala, would it?
Well, I'm sorry, say it again?
I said you mentioned a rogue grand jury who went off half-cocked. That wouldn't be in Ocala, Florida, in Marion County, would it?
No. That grand jury is a citizen's grand jury run by a lawyer. I think the county is Polk or Pokey or something like that. Polk, Florida. I'm looking for it because I got the paper.
At any rate, I believe his first initial is L and his last initial is K, if I'm correct.
Isn't he talking about the one where the guy got arrested, John?
but that's a, that's in the one I'm talking. The one that guy got arrested, I think, is Polk County. I'm looking for it. His first initial is S. Oh no, M S. M S is his initials. Does that mean anything to you? M S.
No, I was talking about the one that issued indictments, and I think he even went so. Oh, he also issued an indictment against a prosecutor.
Yeah, he's still operating down there. Mm-hmm. And I understand he's operating from within the auspices of the courts.
It seems to be, yeah.
Yeah.
From what I read of what he put online about it.
And that's what we teach. We teach people not to do anything until you get into that courtroom. Because, look, you have to get the authority. The moment you get into the courtroom, they've accepted you, you know, the courthouse. And that's what our battle is right here. And in order to get into that courthouse, if we have to set up a tent in order to do an indictment to get in there, we will do it. We've done exactly that. Other than that, we would not indict anyone until we get into that courthouse. Mm-hmm. But we will indict the judges that get in the way of letting us into the courthouse. There is no other way. But there are some things. There are appropriate steps to take after this, should they be as bold as to go and try to remove the filing that we are going to do. If they're that bold, there are certain steps that could be taken that we cannot talk about, because I don't even know if they know what steps could be taken, but we do.
No.
We have a lot of advisors, by the way, you know, around the country. One particular that we talk to all the time, but we have others. We have advisors, and we take their advice very seriously.
Yes, plus I think it's in our interest if they stay as deep in the dark as they can until we appear before them.
We have numerous private attorney generals that are very well equipped and knowledgeable and understand the system on the federal and the state levels.
Excellent. And other than that, I'm just a little bit antsy about my presentation Wednesday night, so I had to get on and say something to somebody. That's all I had.
Okay, I missed that last part, though.
Oh, I said, other than that, I was just a little bit antsy about my presentation Wednesday night.
Oh, okay.
And I just had to get on the microphone and say something about it.
Yeah. Well, look, I know when I first started talking in public, it was a little, you know, it's a little hard. And after a while, it doesn't mean anything. It's like talking to someone at a table, just sitting down and talking, you know. It passes. There's nothing to be, you know, really worried about.
I think going in, I'll just assume I'm talking to all my friends, and
that's all.
That might make it a little bit easier.
They're all like-minded people, you know.
Uh huh. Or they wouldn't be there.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Ricky. Who's next, Rod?
Gloria Johnson.
Gloria Johnson. Go right ahead, Gloria.
Gloria Johnson. Go right ahead, Gloria.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Could you update me? I fell asleep. I'm in college, and I was in the study mode, but I fell asleep at our last meeting. On the media coverage from Connecticut.
Right.
Did she follow you on your last?
No, she did not follow us, but we've been keeping her informed. We've tied the television media in with her, and we'll be calling her tomorrow. We've been wanting to call her for days, but I tell you, every minute, every second of our time in the past, 4 days or so, has been nothing. We just don't have the time, you know. But we're going to call her hopefully tomorrow.
Right.
In conference with her, make sure she's up to date, make some corrections or some things we know she misunderstands, and so on.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, Gloria. Who's next, Gerard? Gerard, did you fall asleep on me?
No, I got my mic muted. Alvin looks like he's next.
Alvin, go right ahead.
Gonzalez.
Good to hear from you, Alvin. Good to see you here. Yeah, I know Alvin had a visit from the FBI down there in the Bronx, and maybe that's what he's going to talk about. Alvin, are you there?
Hey, Ellie's asking, where's the September 24th letter from Daly? What's that?
September 24th letter from
Daly. D-A-L-Y.
I don't know.
Is Daly one of the... that's a clerk, I'll bet.
We maybe didn't get a copy of that one. If you want to email us a copy of that, we'll post it up. We have a few others we still have to post.
Yeah, there's some that are not up there.
But I don't recall Daly from the 24th. Just don't recall it.
I don't know what you're talking about. Alvin said, I am free. I don't know what that means. He's open. You're open.
Alvin, go right ahead.
If you can talk.
Alvin, your mic has been opened up. You can talk.
He has no mic. It says he has a mic. All right. Well, you'll have to keep typing then. I don't know what else
right.
to type.
Yeah, when he types a question or a comment, let us know. I could tell you that, by the way, Alvin.
He needs the number, he says. What number? He needs the...
Let's see if there's... No, he's connected to audio right now. Oh, the phone number. If you want to call in on the phone, you can do that. It should connect to you. And you can run that. You could do that. That number should be in the email that you got when you signed up. Should be a number, a phone number, and a access code. So you could do that. Meanwhile, I know that the FBI had visited with you, and I think you gave me the information. I'm looking for that. Give me a call tomorrow morning on that, because I definitely want to call the FBI and find out, what's going on. We got some questions for them. And we need to know who filed this and what kind of a report was made. So, okay, who's next? Just keep an eye out there for Alvin. He may want to put something in the text. Gerard, who's next?
Excuse me. Let's see. That was. Did we talk to Alan yet? Alan Wakefield. He's next.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Go ahead.
Hello.
Go ahead, Alan.
Can you hear? All right. Yeah. Let's go this route. Yes. Okay. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. There's a little bit of a delay, so yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I tried to get on my mic, and I have to use my telephone. Anyway, here's my you talked quite a bit about the oath in the presentation you gave tonight. And I will tell you that in George Washington's farewell address, he said that the oath is the instrument of investigation in the courts of justice. The problem that I find, I live in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, and many of the, judges in the courts in Allegheny County, unfortunately, are members of secret societies, primarily the Freemasons. And not wishing necessarily to attack the Freemasons, and that wasn't my objective here, but what I'm concerned about is that when you give the oath of office, and every oath is on file somewhere with some clerk or some office in the county in which the judge is a judge, and that oath is his signature on a contract between him and we the people. Now, that oath, when he raises his hand to give the oath of office under every constitution, the meaning of the raised hand is he's calling on God to witness that oath. And he's also claiming that he has the lawful standing to give that oath. I don't believe that just everyone can give an oath, otherwise there was no point in putting an oath of office into the constitutions. If you read all of the original constitutions of the original 13 colonies, and probably 20 or 30 states beyond that when they came into the Union, you will find what the lawful standing was to give the oath. Now, so that oath, by the way, is a sacred public oath. Any other oath, secret oath, which these secret societies demand, is a profane private oath. Did I say secret? I'm sorry, a sacred public oath. The oath of office is a sacred public oath. The oaths by secret societies are profane and private oaths, and they are blasphemy under the common law and under the law of God. Blasphemy is a crime. Now and forever, blasphemy is a crime at the common law. So, and I will tell you, criminals cannot hold public office. And so, at any rate, there's more about the oath, but I think that's enough for you to understand that unless we understand the oath and the sacred nature of the oath, we're not holding these people to their oath, and I don't think the Founding Fathers meant us to allow just anybody to give the oath. And if you go back and read the original oath, you will see what the requirements were for giving that sacred public oath. If anybody, I'll make the information available to you on the oath of office. I haven't found much written on it. I've written on it for a number of years and have a document on it, and several documents on it, in fact. Let me tell you one more story, which I think all of the listeners will appreciate. My son and I were in a court several years ago, and we were fighting a particular statute, an unconstitutional statute here in the town where I live, and we got on into the Court of Common Pleas of Allegheny County. And as this case dragged on for 2.5 years, we're not attorneys, we're pro se, and we were probably in front of 5, 6, maybe 7 different judges. The case got bounced around. And in one of the courts, we had filed a brief demanding a trial by a jury of our peers, but peers who understood the constitutions, state and federal, that understood the constitutions well enough to protect not just our rights, but their own. The judge stopped me. He wasn't angry. We never had an angry judge, as far as I can recall. The case ended. We won the case. It was probably 5, 6 years ago we won it. And the judge said to me, he says, "Mr. Wakefield," he says, "I can't give you that." What he was saying is that in all of Allegheny County, which is one of the largest counties of Pennsylvania, second probably just to Philadelphia County, mm-hmm. What he was saying to me is that in all of Allegheny County, there weren't 12 citizens who knew the constitutions well enough to protect their rights. Wow. It gives you some understanding of why we're in the fix we are in today.
Right.
And he said, "I'd have to give you a jury of 12 judges." I didn't want to be in contempt of court, and I didn't want to be disrespectful to the judge. But in my mind, I thought, wow, I haven't seen a judge yet that demonstrated any knowledge of the Constitution. I've had judges in the Court of Common Pleas that said, "Oh, constitutional issues are for the Superior Court or for the Supreme Court." Can you imagine a judge saying that? There was a judge in the Court of Common Pleas that he told me that in person in a hallway once when my son and I were talking to him. And then he also said it in open court. The constitutional questions were for the Superior Court or for the Supreme Court. But that's part of our issue. And I only say that to make you aware and make your listeners aware that we're dealing with a case of ignorance here, gross
Well, that's ignorance. True. That's true. You know, but common law is common sense. And we teach, and that's why we have to go through an orientation. That's why we tell everybody that they need to go through that orientation that we've set up. If they bypassed it, they cheated. They need to go back and go through it if they haven't. And then, of course, if they don't have a grand jury in their county at the time that they get through that, then we have the instructions on how to do that. We're going to create a special orientation that we're going to give to people. You know, we'll put it up online, and everybody can tweak it a little bit, whatever they want to do with it. But we're going to give an orientation. Every person that comes in to act as a jurist, whether it's grand or trial, needs to go through orientation. And there's really not a lot that they need to know. They don't need to know the Constitution per se. If they're deciding on a case concerning a violation by a servant in the Constitution, because remember, the Constitution was written to let them know what they can do. The Bill of Rights was written to let them know what they can't do. But anyway, if there was something, they can read the Constitution and they could look at the charges that the grand jury had written up. and they can listen to the case, and they can make a decision. It's all common sense. You see, for a person to really put forth a good judgment, there are three principles. We mentioned it earlier. We mention it every time we have a meeting anyway. We have to have a sense. We have to come to the table with a sense of justice, a sense of honor, and a sense of mercy. Those are the principles of a good jurist. Listening to the story, because you see, it's the facts that really make the decision. Now, there are two maxims, common law maxims, that each jurist must consider and realize. One is, for every injury, there must be a remedy. Okay, so that's a maxim. And so what they're looking to do is to discover if the person is guilty of the charges. And if they did, they are guilty of those charges, then they have to figure a way to find, to reinstate, to restore the injured party. That's what they need to do. Another maxim is that if there is no injured party, then there is no crime, okay? So they need to be looking to make sure that they see that injured party. Generally, that is really the job of the grand jury. They're not to send a case in if there's no injured party, and the state certainly cannot be that injured party. So it doesn't really get any more difficult than that. It has to do with integrity, common sense, a sense of honor, a sense of justice, a sense of mercy. Sometimes a case, the person may be guilty of sin, but there are extenuating circumstances. And the trial jury may collectively agree, hey, you know, if I was in that person's situation, I would have done the same thing. You know, I don't know. Every case is a case unto itself to be decided by uniquely 12 other individuals that are really struggling to get the right decision to bring justice into that courtroom. So it doesn't get any more difficult than that. Everybody knows what their rights are. Their rights are that they could do anything they want to do and nobody can stop them, providing they don't injure another human being. And that, of course, could be psychological injury, too. That could be moral injury, you know, corrupting the morals of a minor. You know, so those could be extended out to those realizations. And again, it gets back to the principles. And again, that's what jury orientation is all about. It's a necessity that people go through the jury orientation program that we put together. And we're going to put something together specific that will be more interactive between the administrators of the grand jury. We teach that there are four administrators in each county, and those individuals are responsible to administer and administrate the jury system to make sure that jurists are brought in, that they go through the process of orientation, that they understand what their job is, that they're qualified. And being qualified means that they're able to comprehend what they're being told, of course, on the one hand, the principles that's necessary, and that they take that they make a sworn oath that they will do everything they can to uphold those things, those principles in their decision making, and it just doesn't get any more difficult than that. It's really quite simple, and it has to remain simple, you know.
I'm specifically focusing on that oath, and can just anyone if you understood the oath well enough, if we as people understood the oath, you and I wouldn't be talking right now. There'd be no need to, because the people that have given the oath to take that public office and hold public office, they would have a standard that George Washington spoke of in that oath. There was a judge in the Court of Common Pleas of New York in 1831 that de Tocqueville reported on in his book Democracy in America, and a judge found out one of the witnesses did not believe in God, and the judge said to him, he says, I have to sanction your testimony. He says, there's not a court in a Christian land. Well, that brings up a whole can of worms, but he says at that time there's not a court in a Christian land that would allow your testimony without such a belief. He was telling me, if you don't believe in God, he says, we have no standard by which to measure the veracity of you and your oath.
And every grand jury and every trial jury has to figure that one out on their own.
I agree. They have to. A number of my our friends in the local grand jury or association are aware of exactly what I'm talking about.
And the oaths that these people take are watered down, and they're problematic. And maybe someday, once we get the control back of our countries, maybe we can sit down and reconsider the oaths that they take, because they are they're very watered down. And we wrote it's an affidavit where they're taking a vow, and we also give the biblical principle of a vow. We have a footnote. If you're looking at your computer, you'll see. And yeah. we show you where in the Bible it talks about taking vows, and God permits a vow. And our oath, which is kept by one of the administrators, whoever is doing the main secretarial work, keeping the records, that mm-hmm. person would keep the signed affidavit of every individual that becomes a jurist. And that would hold up the next time if they come back next year and they've been through the process. They don't have to repeat it. It's already on file, and mm-hmm. if they don't mm-hmm. want to, they don't have to go through the orientation again. But it goes like this. I vow to the governor of the universe in my capacity as jurist to ensure that all public servants uphold the United States Constitution and Bill of Prohibition rights, and to carry out all my deliberations under natural law, principled under justice, honor, mercy, and to strictly adhere to the following two legal maxims. One, every right, when withheld, must have a remedy, and every injury is proper redress. And two, in the absence of a victim, there can be no crime, corpus delicti, and the state cannot be the victim. Now, it doesn't get any more difficult than this.
Yeah, I like that oath, John. I do. I like that oath. And you started out But what the beginning of it demands and presupposes that the person who recognizes the governor of the universe recognizes, okay, that, and that's critical. That's critical. And the people that are in public office today clearly do not recognize God as someone who they're responsible to.
That's why they think they can take our rights away, because they don't
believe that we have rights
from God. And that is the first most important thing that people have to understand as Americans. I don't care whether you believe in a God or you don't believe in a God, but you know what? Right now you're in Rome. You do what the Romans do. So you're enjoying the fruits of our belief in the Creator to bequeath to you your unalienable rights, even though they don't come from us. They come from God. But we'll let you claim that even though you don't believe in Him, you see, because you're over here. And when we get at somebody from another country that comes over here and does a crime, guess what? They got the same rights we do. We got no right to not give them due process or anything else. This business of they're not Americans, they don't get the full rights, is the beginning of the trouble of taking people's rights away. Because the minute a man is big enough to take another human's rights away, guess what? You just diminished God, and you just diminished your unalienable right.
Good point, and I want to say both of you have done a great job. I appreciate very much what you've done and what you're doing, and thank you. I'm going to sign off.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for your kind words. We appreciate it. All right, who's next?
Let's see. Johnny B. Michael's hand's been up for a while.
Johnny B. Michael, we're back to him again. See if he's still with us.
Unless I
Let's try it again.
I got you, Johnny.
Hey. I've noticed the problem is when you're on the phone and the computer at the same time.
Ah, okay.
Okay. My laptop, I don't have a very good sound system in the laptop, so I've got to plug the speakers in for the wife to hear, and I have to unplug them when you all come around. So much for that idea. John, where are you going to publish that deal on the public access TV? Because I've been in that forum a couple of times in the past and never got past the city councils.
The information on how to get into public access?
Right.
As soon as I can get a hold of the individual that taught me, and I did it once a while back, but, it's kind of foggy, so I'll have to get the details, and we'll write something up and we'll post it. We will probably post it up on, probably right here, on the Juris Document page.
That'd be great.
Okay. We'll probably post it here. Okay?
That'd be great.
But when we do it, we will announce it and we'll point out where we posted it at.
Right. Well, I've tried it several times back in Missouri where I'm from, And both times I was directed to the city council, and they pretty well just shut me down.
Yeah, so, they like to do that. They don't want the people on the airway. They don't want the people to – they want the people to just be quiet, silent slaves. Obedient.
Absolutely.
That's all they want.
Okay, next question. Do the wife and I need to update our oaths? Because we're comfortable and we know who our God is.
Well,
and
when you go in,
we swear an oath to him, not nobody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and that's why we put it the way we did. And we also wrote the biblical principles that back up the ability to do that without that wouldn't be in violation of his law. And, you know, look at everyone. You do it in your own county, and you just do the paper. You don't need to be before someone to say it. You just go into a notary, have it notarized. You've taken your oath, and then you file it with your the four administrators. You may be one of those administrators. So it gets filed and put in a file cabinet there. And it's for us to know that everybody understands what their real job is and their frame of mind has to be. And if they break that during the process as we are considering a case, we're going to stick that into their nose and say, hey, you know, this is what you said and agreed to, and this is the principles you have to act upon. And we'll remind them, because we need justice. This is about justice, bringing justice back into the court. Bringing justice is bringing God into the court. That's what it is. It's synonymous, as a matter of fact.
Couldn't agree more. A couple more things. I've been visited by the FBI in the past due to my pursuits and activities.
Right.
And furthering my education. How do we answer? I mean, surely we don't send them to you if we're in another state, do we?
No. We're going to do a special thing on dealing with we did do something a little bit, but I want to do something where we record something, maybe a 10-minute clip or something on how to deal and talk with. I think we talked about this last week. But we'll do something, a clip onto its own, and put it up. And basically, look, you want to – you know, cooperate to some degree with them. You don't want to make them fill out the forms. You know, with the grand jury, first of all, you know, who gave you our names?
There
okay?
You go.
And because that was inappropriate to begin with. The other thing is you want to know who made these charges. You see, you got to ask the right questions, and you can't go forward until you know the answers. You know, you want to know who these people are. You want to look at their badges. You want them to hold them up while you copy the information and write the numbers down. You want to do the same thing with their ID. You want to do it with both of them. You want to get their phone numbers. You want to ask them, is this you? Okay, is this you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, what is causing this that you should come and talk to me that you're investigating? It seems that you're investigating me. So, you know, what are the charges or what are the accusations? You know, and what is the name of the person that made these accusations? And if it's just an accusation, well, what are you doing out here doing that? There must be a report of a violation of a crime for you to come. I mean, I don't understand what are you looking for the crime to see?
Yeah.
You know, the only people on the planet that I know of that have the authority to look to see if there is a crime only because they want to make sure that there isn't is the grand jury. And they can only do that to the servants. They can't do that to the general public. That would be violating their unalienable rights, like you don't realize it are doing to me right now. But, you know, and I know you don't realize it. Maybe you may want to go there. Just leave it with that. They know what you just said. But you can answer their questions also. But first you want to establish what this is all about. And they'll always lead off with the first question to you is, are you a sovereign citizen? You know? Are you one of them sovereigns? And that's an insult, you know. But you don't want to get upset with them. You want to be humble. You want to be polite. You want to be nice. And you want to be careful, you know. And you might want to say, well, you know, why would you ask that kind of a question? You know, I personally would say to them something like, well, I'm aware that there's some crazies that I heard about over the Internet that call themselves sovereign citizens, but they don't understand what sovereign it really means anyway, and because if they understood that, they'd understand that everyone else is sovereign too. But, you know, you don't want to get too engaged in that conversation.
No, all we had was just a social conversation. They realized that, first of all, I was educating myself, and second of all, I was pretty far along in my education, and it was a very cordial conversation, and I haven't heard back from them since, so apparently there wasn't too big of an investigation going on. Where I had my problem with my sovereign identity was with the local police department. And they established me as a sovereign in and of their own court and treated me as such. But that's a whole other battle coming up down the road.
All right, is there any other questions or anything? Because what I want to do is I want to try to move over to get, before people start leaving, to get these people who are going to do the faxes, get that in order, and then we can come back and talk some more. Do you have any other questions?
Okay, the only other thing is Michael Badnair's Constitution class.
What about it?
We're going to get back on the website.
Oh, that's right. You know, I'm sorry, I haven't had time. I remember someone telling me I haven't had time, but I'll get up there to get it.
So, I'm sending a lot of people to the website, but I'm not seeing them sign up here locally.
Right.
So it
takes time. You got to make the phone calls and follow up. You got to make those follow ups because people forget, they get lost, and so on, and they procrastinate. We're trained procrastinators. Remember that. So.
Yep. All right, yeah, that'd be good.
All right. Okay, before we get going, let me stop.